There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Hour number two, Thursday style of Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another hour of live local talk. Text line, phone line, they're the same, 343-0106. That's very efficient. The website, fmtalk1065.com, where you can stream us. You can check out three big things, top news stories of the day, show schedules, podcasts, all kind of good stuff. And then, of course, the Facebook and Instagram and Twitter feeds as well, all for FM Talk 1065. All right, I think I mentioned at the beginning of last hour, maybe I didn't, the move happening in Washington today, one of the moves happening in Washington today, and that is about packing the Supreme Court, or as Representative Nadler said, it's not packing the Supreme Court. Well, go ahead, let's run his audio.
And some people will say we're packing the court. We're not packing it, we're unpacking it.
Okay, so let's save that in my folder there with all the political doublespeak, which is getting so large it's going to take up a terabyte drive, but there it is. So we're not packing it, we're unpacking it. This move, of course, of moving from the traditional 9 members of the Supreme Court to now go to 13 justices. A group of Democrats today formally launched a legislative effort to pack the Supreme Court by adding 4 more justices in a move that was hailed by progressive activists, but quickly met with fierce GOP opposition and skepticism by Democrat leadership. And we'll have this conversation right now with my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. Clocking in as a Democrat. I'll clock in as the, I guess, conservative, and we'll figure out what the right one is here. Hey, man.
Sean, you know, sometimes you just claim the GOP mantra. Just go with it, man.
I don't, though. You know, I'm just I'm a guy that votes my my mind. And it's
forget my manners. First of all, how are you doing today? How are you holding up, man?
I'm still here, so that's good. I think I'm all right. I didn't flood away today. You and the missus, y'all good?
Yeah, we're good now. We got caught up in some of that hail craziness that happened over the weekend, so I have all these little divots in my car.
Oh, no.
But we're all good to go, though, man. We're all good to go, so like thanks a lot for asking.
Like your car? The car I know? That car?
Yeah. Hers was protected, of course, so I was the one who ended up with the damage, but be all good.
Robert's got, like, nice car. Oh, that hurts to think hail hitting that. Okay, let's talk about this.
I was going to say, you know, occasionally I try to avoid you putting me in the box, but I think I'm going to just have to take the hit on this one. I think I would define this advocacy as court packing. I don't think I would say it was court unpacking.
Thank you. So in this case, Nadler, is that okay to put in my political doublespeak file?
Yeah, okay. I think that's one's going to have to go on with what's wrong with the beer that we got, right? That is a good one.
Yes, he's going in. So, okay, this is this question. It was discussed, you know, it was actually during the Democrat primary. It was discussed about this move to pack the court. I guess we may want to back up for a second and talk about this, that Supreme Court has been 9 since I've been paying attention, but this move now has to go. To go to 13. Why is that a good thing?
Well, I think you have to distinguish what's constitutional versus what's done by legislation, right? And as a political science guy, I'm a bit of a political science purist. So odd numbers are better than even numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think fewer is better than more, right? So I like the idea of there being 9 people on the court. And I've said that publicly, and I will continue to state that. I think what we're ending up faced with now is what I call, you know, just the theater of the absurd. And so you have to go all the way back to the initial action by Harry Reid, when, based upon the challenges that President Obama had getting his lower court nominees confirmed by the Senate, they basically dispensed with the filibuster for that. And that's what set the stage for what happened to Merrick Garland when the Republicans were in control, and then subsequent to that, when they exercised a nuclear option so the filibuster doesn't apply anymore. So I think if you look at all those in continuation, this is the next natural step, so that whenever the court swings beyond a 5-4 majority, there is an impetus to want to increase the number of Supreme Court justices simply because there's the ability to do that. And unfortunately, I just think that's the reality of the world we're in. I don't think it's going to pass unless there's a modification to the filibuster. But it just might be the world that we're in right now.
But, and that's part of this discussion. If it goes, you know, completely partisan here, so you pack when you have control, the Democrats have control of legislative, of course, and the executive branch. You move through, you pack the court to, one of the quotes here was from a story I was reading, Mitch McConnell said, to guarantee the rulings that liberals want, this would destroy the legitimacy of the court. Okay. Well, then, I can say this.
I don't really think that's the case, right, any more than, like, right now, we talk about election consequences, right? And you and I both talked about before where there was no dispersion cast on either President Obama for nominating Merrick Garland or on President Trump for nominating ACB. But it was ultimately on the Senate Majority Leader with what it was he did with those nominations. So, basically, Mitch McConnell owns this. Hook, line, and sinker. So if there's any concern a person to be held accountable, it really should be him.
Well, let me say this. There's a chance here for this to be stopped, because if it made it through, and I do believe, in the essence of what Mitch McConnell is saying, this is being done right now because it would, you put three more in, put four more in here. What is it, 9-13? Yeah, 13. So you put four more in.
You got to get to seven on the Democratic side.
Right. So you get that number. You can pass through liberal rulings out of the Supreme Court, which is interesting because conservatives will often gnash teeth that there's conservative nominees that can put in the court. And then as they stay in the court, their rulings, for a lot of people, they believe become less and less conservative. But if this is done to get the rulings liberals want, then the next time that the shoe is on the other foot, that Republicans control, have bicameral control in the executive branch, they're going to move to balance that out with adding more of their own. And at a certain point, it is silly. We could have a Supreme Court that could swell as large as the body of the House of Representatives.
Sure. At the theoretical level, that could happen. It probably won't, because this is probably not going to pass. Right. But if it does, and, 9-13, is that the end of the world? Probably not. If it's 435, like the U.S. House of Representatives, well, sure, you're into an absurdity space. But the reason why I thought the accountability part of it was so important was I would think of everything that I've learned about government since the time that I've, left undergrad. It's really the role of the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader and what they can decide to do or decide not to do. So that's really where I think the accountability should be placed.
But I tell you what won't happen is there won't be, because once they're there, it's a lifetime appointment. That's not going to change, right? So
sure.
You're never going to go backwards. You're never going to go.
You can't put that genie back in the bottle, right? And that's the reason why. So let's think about this from the perspective of Merrick Garland again. So at that particular point in time, if Merrick Garland had gotten a hearing or gotten a vote, there are all indications that it would have passed. So you never would have been in the position of having to exercise the nuclear option when President Trump ended up winning and wanted to put his nominees in. So, again, if we're going to talk accountability, it can't just be what the Democrats are proposing currently, but it has to do with how the Republicans implemented within their span of control previously.
Yeah, I'm looking at text coming in here, Robert, and Bobby says, how do we stop this? And Bobby may be saying this just from a political angle or a partisan angle, but this is a good question. How do we stop this? What is a... It's win at all cost, it's a slash and burn to the traditions of our how we govern, right? I mean, there's a lot of that goes on.
Yeah, I think the way that we do it is we the people, right, have to be focused on the things that are substantive and not necessarily responding to all the red meat. And I'll give you an example. You had one of the state representatives on earlier. I believe it was Representative Stringer talking about Highway 45.
Right.
Right. And so that particular issue, the safety concerns that are on Highway 45 are something that unite all of us, Republican, Democrat, black, white, everyone from Spring Hill Avenue to the Mississippi line.
Mm-hmm.
And we have tons of issues like that that we can focus on. But invariably, we'll be here having a, you know, the fifth grade slap fight about something that doesn't really matter. Right. And the more that we can focus on substance and the less we focus on that, then all of us collectively can go back and say, you know what? We probably prefer nine justices versus 11 or 13 or 27 or whatever the number is. And then they will have to listen to us. But until we actually start doing that, I think it's going to continue to be, you know, what we're seeing today.
Yeah. I just wonder for folks out there, voters out there, they say, well, as long as what I believe, or my team, which I think is a problem, you do too, that my team wins, then, to hell with it. Let's just do what we got to do to win. You know, we got to win. It's more important. I don't care. I mean, we got to win this battle today. We don't sit here and lose for some kind of high and mighty ideal of the, you know, government of the United States.
Sure, and we talk about this quite a bit when, you know, when we hit the areas where you and I agree, we're always trying to balance the pragmatic versus the theoretical, right? And so even when we talked about, I think you guys covered this in the show earlier, when President Biden talks about removing the troops from Afghanistan by the anniversary of September 11th, that's consistent with what President Trump's policy was, albeit I think the timing was slightly different, but it's really the same policy, right? So you can't simultaneously, at least from my chair as a Democrat, criticize President Trump for wanting to do that and then applaud President Biden for doing it, right? We should have these things that transcend administration. And the more we're able to focus on those types of things, like I said, again, we're going to have plenty of stuff to fight about, right? Yeah. When we just put liberal philosophy versus conservative philosophy, but it doesn't necessarily have to be everything.
You know, on that, and I want to get your opinion as well as a veteran, because y'all's opinions are most important to me on this. What's your feeling on that, on getting the last of the troops out of Afghanistan?
Well, this actually goes back to something I think it was Representative Tulsi Gabbard said, you know, when she was being raked over the coals, that we have to get away from this notion that we have to be somewhere forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that folks have a tendency to make a distinction between, you know, some of the stuff that me and my brother did earlier in our careers. I was stationed in Japan and Singapore. He was stationed in South Korea. You know, my dad was stationed in South Korea back when he was in the Army. Do you know what I mean? And so we understand there's some uniqueness with North Korea versus South Korea, which, you know, informs our presence there. But we look at what it was we were trying to accomplish when we went into Afghanistan, and the fact that it's the longest war in our nation's history, at some point in time, we have to decide, hey, you know, enough's enough. We need to have enough troops in the area in case we need to respond in a way that's rapid. But that doesn't necessarily mean we need to risk lives and treasure on the ground within the boundaries of that state. And that's just kind of how I feel about it. I think of even when I was on staff at the Naval Academy and I had students that I was teaching at the time who started and ended a full career with us in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Just think about that conceptually, you know, full 20-year career of people doing that. So I think it's the right call. Again, we can always argue about whether it should have been by Christmas, which was, I believe, President Trump's original proposal,
right,
or whether it's September 11th, which is President Biden's intention. But I think we're moving in the right direction.
I can get in the details. I guess maybe you heard yesterday, because I said I supported it when President Trump said remove the troops, and I support it when President Biden says it. So, I agree.
Sure.
On the inside of it, I don't like the, you know, whenever executive branch member says it's going to be by this date, because I don't want anything to jeopardize our troops while they're there. The feeling, but I do worry about setting a date certain on it, but, you know, that's just me.
And again, that's completely reasonable, right? And so sometimes there's a very substantive argument that says you just do it, but you don't really tell anyone that you're doing it. so they don't know exactly what you're doing, but at the same time, we're, you know, protecting those individuals who are putting their lives at the tip of the spear to make sure that, the world's a better place. So, yeah, I don't really have any pushback on that.
Yeah, I wonder if you don't even need to do polling on this. The fact that you have now, there's people in each party, Democrats and Republicans, that disagree with it. But you have, you know, you have a Republican president and a Democrat president both talking about this. I think it represents the views of the majority of Americans.
I think so too. And again, it's, you know, it was different when we were all, you know, sitting there watching television all day as it was happening there in 2011, or as we were watching television all day as we were actually going through the invasion of the Iraq, you know, part two, if you will. But it's different, man. There's no reason why we should be in this multi-generational space where we're passing this responsibility from, you know, one generation to the next. And we can think of it not only in terms of the lives that we're sacrificing or the bodies that are being broken. Just think about how much money we're spending on this and how those dollars, you know, from a fiscal responsibility standpoint, could be applied in other areas domestically. So, I think we're moving in the right direction. Again, I think this is something that unified the two administrations, and I think we'll be better off for it.
There we go. As always, I appreciate our conversations, and we will touch base again next week.
All right, you be good and stay dry.
All right, you too, and keep that vehicle under some kind of cover. I mean, just park it in my garage or something, man. Why don't you just let me take care? I'll take care of it for you. Okay, it'll be fine.
All right, man. Well, you guys be good. Good being able to talk to you. You take care.
You too. Robert Kennedy Jr. And check him out, Kennedy for Alabama on social media. Coming right back, we'll grab your calls and text at 343-0106. We're not packing the court, we're unpacking it. Okay. Thanks, Nadler.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 127 FM Talk 106.5. Well, I think we have enough time just to update this story. And this story is, I know, captivated thoughts of a lot of y'all in our house. I mean, other than my boy, everybody in our house was talking about this last night. The story of the commercial platform vessel that overturned off Louisiana. So the Louisiana Coast Guard search said the crew has yet to locate 12 missing after the vessel capsized. Okay, here's the story. Fox News updated this. It says 12 people missing after a commercial platform vessel overturned in the waters off Louisiana have still not been located as of this morning, Coast Guard tells Fox News, as members are holding out hope that their loved ones are alive. Developments come as new footage emerged of the waves thrashing against the Sea Corps power in rough seas about 7 nautical miles off the coast of Port Fouchon. The ship encountered challenging weather in which winds were gusting as high as 90 miles per hour and seas were 7 to 9 feet. And the 7 to 9 feet thing is interesting. That was a discussion last night. First of all, 90 miles per hour. Did y'all see the gale warnings the other night? We even had them down here. The thing came up on my alerts there that we had a gale warning here, which, by the way, I heard we got some. Robert's talking about getting some flooding on Dolphin Island, too. I have not checked in down there. But it overturned. It overturns this platform. I wonder if something else was going on. I don't know that. I mean, I'm not saying that 7 to 9 feet, you know, 7 to 9 foot waves are anything to sneeze at. They're not. But they're also, I mean, in the wintertime, I mean, I know there's folks out there that worked offshore can tell you that's the thing that happens. I mean, not 90 mile per hour winds, but 7 to 9 feet in seas is something that happens. They go on to say, according to Will Watson, sector commander of Coast Guard Sector New Orleans, said, whenever we engage, the Coast Guard engages in a search and a rescue effort. We are hopeful. When asked for his outlook on the search to those missing, he said, you can't do this work if you're not optimistic, if you're not hopeful when you do it. So I will tell you, we remain hopeful. 19 people were on board the vessel, 6 of whom have been rescued and brought to safety. Search and rescue crews at the ship's current site found one person deceased, and they're still missing 12. Sad story for sure out there. All right, coming right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By the way, same time doing the show, monitoring the meeting of the Gulf Council. Now, this is going to be the people making the decision on what we might be looking like for a snapper season this year. This is the federal component of it before the state would be able to parse out the days on this. And it's, you know, it's going to be a tough situation, even with the backdrop. I told you, remember when all the TV news said, it's a Great American Snapper Count, which we told you about when it came out last year. It says three times the number of snapper in the Gulf or tonnage in the Gulf as previously estimated, which is a conservative estimate. And that's all true, but it looks like that doesn't just equal. We may actually, you know, it's we'll parse this out on the outdoor show this weekend. But even though you have the estimate coming in, the scientific estimation here, so it's not just anecdotal, us saying it, scientific estimation of three times the biomass of red snapper in the Gulf as they previously thought were there, we still may lose a lot of days of fishing. So that's being discussed right now in the meeting. And there, I go for the vote today. It could happen anytime. I don't think it's happened yet. I got people inside there giving me updates. So hopefully if that breaks, that news, how they vote, if they're going to punish us or not, even though they have information shows them the opposite, we'll keep our eyes on this and let you know. All right. Okay, we have time to get to those. I want to grab some text here at 343-0106. Chuck's text. Sean, do you foresee Meemaw passing? I'm offended by that, Chuck, using that term. It's Governor Meemaw passing legislation that other states have concerning federal overreach of the new gun law, i.e. not going to enforce federal gun confiscation. Okay, check if you could, let's see, if you just Google the story, or you can go back and check out the podcast from earlier this week when I had District 102 Representative Shane Stringer on. He's bringing this bill in the House that would do something very similar to your talk about. It basically says that the state would not enforce what they say would be unconstitutional laws, violations of the Second Amendment. So it would work that way. It would say, I think actually the representative, I think Representative Stringer called it a Second Amendment sanctuary state law. So do I see the governor signing that? I do, Chuck. I would say yes. I don't think nothing that she's done in the past makes me think she wouldn't sign something that's a Second Amendment. Yeah, I don't see. I might be surprised. Lord knows. But right now, I don't see her not signing that. If I think it makes it through, I think it's gonna. I don't know to what end. Because you got. I mean, the feds are going to come down on this. Okay, remember, let's go on the time machine. How far back was that? First term of former President Obama, I think first term. With sanctuary cities starting and non-enforcement. Remember the call basically in so many words through the DOJ of non-enforcement of immigration laws. And the state of Alabama, remember, said, wait, we're going to enforce those laws. I wonder if it came through in a bill. But basically the state of Alabama said, well, we're going to enforce the law of the land. We're going to follow the rule of law when it comes to immigration. And do y'all remember, was it in the Ninth Circuit it went? I don't have it in front of me. This is off the top of my head. This may have been 8 or 9, 10 years ago, a while ago. I think first term of President Obama. And the feds came down hard on it. We lost that one. In other words, we lost that one. So does that same thing happen here? But the nice thing about it, and I think that's the idea, the idea would be to have it go to the Supreme Court, right? That the federal government, it would go to the Supreme Court. Of course, now we don't know if Nadler et al. Get what they want and they pack the court, or as he said earlier, we're actually unpacking it. Shut up. I'm putting that in the file of dumb political statements. If they pack the court and get another four justices in there that are liberal, maybe it doesn't turn out like we think. So maybe Alabama, you know, we pass this law. And so, yeah, Chuck, I think the governor would sign off on it. And to move past that, the governor signs off on it, though, and then do we get sued by DOJ on that? And can we – what happens in the meantime? It's – and I keep going back. Watch this PLCAA. Watch this – watch for a push coming on this because they know they don't have gun – you know, anti-Second Amendment – advocates out there don't have the votes to push through repeal of the Second Amendment and the or the draconian laws they want. They don't have that, but they can nibble around the edges. And you know, those are the ideas of pistol braces and you know, anything like that they're going to push out there. But because those things, because Democrats that are pro or come from states that have pro Second Amendment Democrats, which there are plenty of, you know, at least in our part of the world, maybe not in some other states, but there's plenty of pro Second Amendment Democrats, so they won't. They can't get those folks to vote for you know, draconian moves or repeal of the Second Amendment. But they can do things like, oh, you can't have a pistol brace. Oh, you can't have a magazine with, you know, more than 10 rounds. But this PLCAA, which is basically it's what protects a gun manufacturer from being sued when somebody legally buys one of their guns and goes and commits a crime. Right? It would make sense that they shouldn't be sued, but there's a law to make sure they can't. Now, if a gun, once again, doesn't protect them, if they had a, they built a faulty firearm and it, you know, backfired, something like that happened, you could still have a lawsuit there. But if somebody legally goes and obtains one of their firearms and goes and commits a crime, it keeps them from being named in a suit. Because if that happens, they can't afford it. They quit making guns. And I think that that is a push here that might make it through because it's nuanced enough that it's not taking people's guns specifically, right? So you're a Democrat that's in a purple state, or even if you're in a blue state, but it's a, you know, a different kind of blue state that has, you know, strong ties to the Second Amendment. You say, oh, I'm not voting to take away guns. What I'm doing here is just trying to make, you know, make sure things are fair out there. You know, in other words, it can be cloaked. And it would be without the federal government having to do a thing. The court system, not the federal government in a way, but the judicial branch and lawsuits would do what they couldn't do in the legislative branch. And I know I sound like a broken record on this, but it's for good reason. This is where I think it comes from. On the Grant says, Sean, watch, they're going to use federal highway funding to flex on the states that on these gun laws, like they did Louisiana on the drinking age, in my opinion. They might, Grant, they might. You remember that? Yeah. That was when I was a youngster, right? So it was it all of Louisiana or just maybe Orleans Parish? You could drink at 18 there. This is back in the olden days, Dalton, back in late 80s. But then they were going to withhold highway funds. They did the same thing in Montana, too, because Montana had, I mean, this has been, it's not been too long ago, maybe 15 years ago. Within Montana used to have roadways that said, I think, use caution or use appropriate. In other words, there was not a speed limit on some of those roads. And they started putting the thumb screws on them on that, too. And now it's something cool. It's like 80 or something. I don't know. But they did that. So, Grant, you may be right. They may go after it that way, but they may go after it just like they did when Alabama said we were going to, which was so strange, we were going to enforce the federal law because federals weren't going to do it. So Alabama was going to stick with the rule of law and enforce federal immigration law. And federal government said, negative, you're not going to do that. So it was.
I think I had the dates on. You were wondering when that happened.
Yes, exactly. When was that? I mean,
So back in 2011... August of 2011 was article from Reuters that says Obama administration sues to block Alabama immigration law. So that would have been 2011. And at that point, they were calling Alabama's illegal immigration law the toughest in the United States.
So 2011. So that would have been the end of his first.
Yeah, towards the end of his first term.
But it was first term. I got it right.
And then it looks like this was followed up on in April of 2013. The Supreme Court, the last week of April, voted 8-1 and said basically immigration laws are reserved for the federal government to enforce.
Right. So I wonder if we buck the trend here with one of these. And Alabama's not the only, they're going to have to come get all of us because there's all of it. There's going to be a handful of states that do this. Will they come and say, you can't make that?
Yeah, and it looks like what they did at that point, they went after Alabama because they decided Alabama had the toughest of the state laws. So whoever ends up having the quote-unquote toughest protections, Second Amendment protections
will be the test case.
That would be the test case, yeah.
Okay, so that was first came up in 2011, and it was decided in 2013.
Yeah, about a year and a half later.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it goes that way or if it we'll see. I mean, there's this – obviously, there's lawsuits brought, and we'll have the attorney general on from time to time, and I know when he's conjoined in some – there's some lawsuits that absolutely are relevant to the state of Alabama. Okay? They're like the census data. Which is that thing has not been resolved yet. That's a whole thing that's still going on. But it makes sense for Alabama to be in those lawsuits. Sometimes we're signed on to lawsuits that they can link it back to Alabama. But what I think is going on, and maybe one of these folks will tell me off the air if I'm right, but you work with other attorneys general to say, okay, you got my back on this one. As long as the lawsuit doesn't go against the idea of the state or the vibe, that you sign on to these lawsuits to show strength in numbers. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's another state that'll, you know, sign on, even have a gun law pass through just to stand with another, you know, to let's all get in on it.
Yeah, we've seen that with Attorney General Marshall. I mean, how many press releases over the last year alone have there been? Attorney General Marshall signs letter with 19 other attorneys general.
Yeah,
I think that happens often.
So we may look at something like that. All right, let's do this. We'll go to the news and come right back. Phone number is 343-0106, 343-0106, and we'll talk to you next right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, still nothing. Well, nothing to report specifically, but keeping our eyes on that Gulf Council meeting. And by the way, Saturday, Mike Ward and I, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, we'll go Nadler and unpack that. Where did that come from? We're unpacking this. All right. Jace says, so Louisiana went from 18 to 21 in 86. A loophole that allowed bars was closed in 96. They changed to 21 when he turned 21. So just talking about that today. So, yeah, so I know that it was, I don't think, this would have been 19, when I would have been paying attention to it, would have been late 89, 90, right in there is when I would have been paying attention to that. And the drinking age was, unless everybody there in Bourbon Street was telling us a lie and just letting us go, it was 18. And so then I guess that was the loophole they used at that point. All right, let's go through this story. You probably heard about this morning, but I want to bring it back up. Because it's just been updated here with a little more information. As we go through the CNN story that I told you I wasn't shocked about, that, you know, Project Veritas has the person on camera from CNN saying, oh, yeah, we purposely worked to try to keep President Trump from getting reelected. I mean, I'm glad Project Veritas is showing that stuff, but it shouldn't surprise us. But here's another one. So this is from the Daily Beast. And Dalton, it was interesting, too, if you Google this. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but you click the news tab, sure hard to find many stories on this. But it says now, U.S. Intel walks back claim that Russians put bounties on American troops. Remember this? It was Adam Ronsley writes this, said it was a huge election time story that prompted cries of treason. But according to newly disclosed assessment, Donald Trump might have been right to call it a hoax. You go on to say it's a blockbuster story about Russia's return to the imperial great game in Afghanistan. The Kremlin had spread money around longtime Central Asian battlefield for militants to kill the remaining U.S. forces. It sparked a massive outcry from Democrats and their hashtag resistance amplifiers about the treasonous Russian puppet in the White House whose admiration for Vladimir Putin had endangered American troops. But today, the Biden administration announced that the United States intelligence only had low to moderate confidence in the story after all. Okay. Translated from the jargon of spy world, that means the intelligence agencies have found the story is at best unproven and possibly untrue. Quote, the United States intelligence community assesses with low to moderate confidence that Russian intelligence officers sought to encourage Taliban attacks on U.S. and coalition personnel in Afghanistan in 2019 and perhaps earlier, a senior administration official said. Goes on to say this information puts a burden on the Russian government to explain its actions and take steps to address this disturbing pattern of behavior. I thought you just said it wasn't. It didn't have. The official went on to say, indicating that President Biden is unprepared to walk the story back fully. Goes on in the story, not in the quote here, to say significantly, the Biden team announced a raft of sanctions on today. Both those sanctions targeting Russia's sovereign debt market are prompted only by Russia's interference in the 2020 election and its alleged role in the SolarWinds cyber espionage. In contrast, Biden administration officials say that their assessment attributing the breach of technology company SolarWinds to hackers from Russia's foreign intelligence services has a high level of confidence. Goes on to say, quote, we have noted our conclusion of the review that we conducted on the bounties issue, and we have conveyed through diplomatic, intelligence, and military channels strong direct messages on this issue, but we're not specifically tying the actions we are taking today to that matter. Yeah, okay. So, what? That it's what so many people said at that point, a hoax? I mean, is that... I wonder how many things will be walked back here. And I'm sure they'll want to walk back these stories, or if they're going to try to air out dirty laundry from what was done in the election cycle, they wouldn't want to get that done in the first couple of years, so they're not actually having to answer for it when it's in the next presidential cycle. Although, as I lament quite often, I think we've gotten to the point where people are like, their side, their team does whatever, it's okay because it's their team. So it's just fine with them. Oh, the gas price thing? Yeah, so text line, here's an interesting observation. Gas is $2.69 on Snow Road. No city gas tax. I'm sitting on University now and seeing gas at $2.59 in the city with its city gas tax. Well, there you go. But there's a county tax, and the state's got its tax. What was the breakdown, I think, out of the 10 cent? Yeah, I think it was, because you got a portion that's state, a portion that's, you know, the state part went up, and then you have the county and I think municipal. I think there are three taxes on it, but I can't say that for sure. But I think that's how it, I think that is how it comes together. But you use, hey man, there's all kind of places on the online to find the lowest gas prices in town. The two apps that run, I got the gas price app and the crawfish price app. Those are the two that get the most use on my my dated Android phone here, the Samsung Galaxy, you know, 1, whatever this is, 8, I think. What's new? They're probably at 12 or 13 now. All right, I have to get that fixed up, and we'll do this all again tomorrow. Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. Check us out there. Instagram, Twitter. Oh, that Facebook thing. Check us out. Stories we're talking about here, you can interact with over there.